we literally can control our physical existence through the power of consciousness. And I don't think that can be done at an egoic level of spiritual development. I think it takes an integrated soul to have so much internal coherence that all of their parts are aligned within and aligned allows them to align with the creative process itself, so that we begin to manifest profoundly the bliss of heaven and the power of heaven and the power of our divine nature inside time and space in the community of other awakened diamond souls.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. I have a client that was running himself ragged. He said it was like running around his organization carrying a heavy fire hose, a massive tool bag, and many buckets. The organization was like a large ship with holes in it and fires breaking out everywhere. They were taking on water, and he was trying to respond to all the fires, the holes, and the breakdowns individually, and he couldn't keep up. He was tired, but committed to saving the ship. Nothing was working like it used to. As we worked together, he eventually shifted to a cosmic perspective and started to look at the consciousness of the whole. Soon, he shifted how he saw his role. For him, he moved from the captain of the ship, trying to run around and save the ship and all the passengers, to seeing the holes, the fires, and the water as transformative agents working to assist him in transforming his organization. He relaxed and became the midwife, birthing a new unitive consciousness and unitive culture within his industry. Everything changed as he reimagined his role, his vision, his goals, and the work of the whole. He reimagined the organization, and everything moved in a new direction. It was not easy, but it was much more efficient than trying to preserve the ship as it was going down. Our guest today, Chris Beige, says we are birthing the diamond soul, the future human. In our last conversation, he said, "The blessings are just enormous, but the work to realize those blessings is serious and demanding. It will ask everything of us." Are you curious? Are you ready to birth yourself and, more importantly, assist humanity in the collective awakening? I am. Let's explore more. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness to your heart, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness as I introduce my co-host. Dr. Paul J. Mills is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of San Diego, California. The University of California, San Diego. He's the author of the award-winning book, Science, Being and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Julie. It's great to be together again. I so appreciated your introduction for this second session we're having with Chris. Such a beautiful tee up and segue, and also create a lot of sense of enthusiasm and curiosity for me as to what's going to unfold.
Well, great. Let's dig into it then. Why don't you introduce Chris and we'll bring him on.
Happy to reintroduce Chris. Dr. Chris M. Beige is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at Youngstown State University, where he taught for 33 years. He is adjunct faculty at the California Institute of Integral Studies and Emeritus Fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. An award-winning teacher and international speaker, Chris has written several books, and for this Main Street Mystic series, we're focusing on one of those books, namely with the title LSD in the Mind of the Universe, Diamonds from Heaven, Chris, it's good to see you again. I'm looking forward to this upcoming conversation today.
Hi, Paul and Julie. It's a pleasure and honor to be with you today.
You know, I love this introduction because, again, this series, Main Street Mystics, is so important and near and dear to my heart. And as we introduce both of you, you are both esteemed academians. You come from a rich heritage of science and this grounded space. And we can start having these conversations that sometimes, you know, used to be woo-woo. And here we are today, being able to really explore some of these concepts and bring them into an embodied sense of reality for us. So, Chris, in our first conversation, it was delightful. And as I listened, there were several things I know I didn't get to myself for that first session. But what I did was pulled some threads from where we were. I want to encourage the listeners, if you didn't hear our first conversation with Chris, please go back and listen, and you'll get the understanding of the breadth and depth of his experience and what he's bringing into this conversation in this book that we're featuring. But in that conversation, you mentioned that all of our personal awakening is pouring into our collective awakening, and we're bringing the structure, clarity, and wisdom of heaven into our species. You called this process the birth of the diamond soul. So let's start right there and define, what is the diamond soul?
Well, this is simply my way of languaging a set of insights that I think many people are having, and they bring different language to it. So in that respect, there's nothing really new. It's just a languaging of it. And it all derives from a particular set of experiences that I had on my psychedelic journey. On one particular day, midway through this 20-year journey, and I don't think I told you this story in our first conversation, stop me if I did, but I had the experience of all my former lives coming into me very quickly, very fast, and they were coming into me, and it was like wrapping string around a kite spool. And all of a sudden, after a while, they reached critical mass, and there was an explosion of diamond light from my chest. And when this explosion happened, all these lives fused into a single consciousness, and I was catapulted into a state of awareness beyond anything I had known up to that point in time. It was an interesting condition because I was an individual, but an individual beyond any frame of reference that I had known before. I wasn't Chris Bache, but I was an individual that contained Chris Bache. And then I was given hours of teaching about reincarnation and where reincarnation is taking humanity. And as I assimilated all these experiences and teachings, I came to understand that a different model of reincarnation than is classically presented in Eastern cultures, because in classic reincarnation cultures, we grow incrementally, lifetime by lifetime. We achieve enlightenment or some type of spiritual awakening. And when we can do, we leave space-time for some off-planet spiritual paradise. In my experience, however, in the sessions, it was a different sense, a different outcome. Yes, reincarnating, hundreds, thousands of lifetimes, incremental development, but there comes a time eventually in each of our evolutionary journeys where all of our former lives come together to crystallize a single soul consciousness, not simply in spiritual reality, which is what I think we return to when we die. Michael Newton's work has shown us when we die, we return to soul consciousness. But actually, the soul consciousness awakens inside our physical incarnation. And this is what I'm calling the birth of the diamond soul. And I call it that because of this diamond light that exploded when all of my former lives fused together into one. And one of the things I was taught really clearly in the session was, this is not an individual spiritual journey. It's not about me. It's not about a handful of spiritual devotees around the world. our entire species is going through this process. And our entire species is coming to a point in history where the forces of nature are conspiring to pull this transition out of us, to pull this integrated remembering and bring us to a culmination. This is a decisive time in history for us to go through this process together.
Chris, when you say that, can you say a little more? You talked about, excuse me, other traditions and other language. Other people have referred to this process. Can you just kind of give us a larger orientation to what that might compare to in other religious traditions or philosophies?
Well, basically, I think the religious traditions, let me separate religion as an exoteric phenomenon covering masses of people, and then religion as an esoteric phenomenon really covering the teachings of advanced masters, advanced meditators. The generalizations I'm going to share really have to do with religion as a social institution, as a social structure. And at that level, the teachings, I think, of all the world religions, Western and Eastern, is that we go through some type of transformation, whether it's enlightenment or salvation or whatever. We come to this transformation, and it results in a condition which is realized in an off-planet paradise. And I think that's pretty wide across the board. You know, in Buddhism, nirvana leads to parinirvana, final nirvana, nirvana without the body, which is considered a higher state than nirvana within the body. In Hinduism, samsara, enlightenment is samsara, escape. Escape from samsara, escape from the cycles of existence. Where I find something new entering the picture is in my psychedelic work. But as I've talked about this to lots of people, I've had many people say that they have experienced the same thing in their spiritual practice, whether it be a meditation practice or whether it be some form of psychedelic practice. That is, what they're seeing is humanity coming to this turning point, humanity coming to this kind of implosion, explosion, transformation, and that a new form of human being is emerging in history. And I think the form of this new form of human being is really written in our history when we understand reincarnation. The future human is the culmination of a process which has been underway for thousands and thousands of years. And the structure of the future human is implicit in the reincarnational dynamic of history.
I think all that you're describing is such a vitally important message for all of us here on our planet for many reasons. Partly, as you're describing, historically, many of our religions and philosophies have kind of described Earth as a place where we've had this fall and it's really too bad, but be good, and if you're lucky, you're going to go to another place, and everything's going to be great.
Yeah,
but that just has ignored so many other beautiful philosophies, and you're bringing forward this again. And I just love what you said in the book, that reincarnation is, you describe it as a higher octave of evolution. And many people, yeah, too, as you're describing in traditions, have had you know, a kind of an adverse opinion about reincarnation, but in fact, it's a beautiful thing of perfection, as you're describing. Reminded me, when I was reading that part of your book, Matthew Fox writes about original blessing. And he reversed what we've been taught. I was taught as a young Catholic boy, original sin. And you're changing also our perspective on reincarnation and also what the human being really is. And that's part of what I'd like you to speak about today, too, this we as creators. And there was one point in your book you described, you know, go forth and create this beautiful illuminated presence. So we as individual human beings, this journey we're on of becoming kind of perfected at the ability to create and not to do that, to leave this third dimension, but really to reside, yeah, in it and enrich it and transform it. So I'd love to have you speak about some of that too, Chris.
You know, sometimes and frequently, actually, I do meditations which start by looking at pictures from the Webb telescope and the Hubble telescope pictures of deep space, pictures of nebula and galaxies, because it just helps me remember that the creative intelligence of the universe thinks on a scale that just boggles our imagination. And historically, we have thought in far too short a time frame to even begin to comprehend what the possible intention of the creative intelligence of the universe is. And we have to radically expand our time horizon and look deep into the rhythms of nature to understand what's emerging. And the more we understand how big the universe is and how much time has been invested in the formation of the universe and how deep and subtle its complex patterns are, the less satisfying it is to adopt any philosophy or religious belief which says the purpose of life is to achieve a realization and then leave, which leaves the whole purpose of time-space behind, unexamined. And with the denigration of matter comes the denigration of women, comes a denigration of our physical sexuality and our physical sensation, and we just kind of push that aside in preference for a spiritualized understanding of what realization is. And I think that makes sense about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, when we were just waking up to the ability to have communion with this transcendent reality. And when you experience it, it is so much more satisfying than physical reality. How could we not but think that the goal was to get back there, that somehow we've fallen out of there and we need to get back there, and that's where we really belong? I understand that. But let's just take it one step further. I think that's a good first approximation of our discoveries 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. But now it becomes clear that the goal is to, in a sense, return home to that state of reality, to that state of consciousness, but to assimilate that state of consciousness into our physical being, to activate our God consciousness, our divine consciousness within our body, and to transform not only our heart and our mind, but our very physiology. I mean, literally the physiology of our sensate existence. And we do this generation by generation, incarnation by incarnation, bringing more and more and more of the reality of the divine into our earthly existence until eventually we literally can control our physical existence through the power of consciousness. And I don't think that can be done at an egoic level of spiritual development. I think it takes an integrated soul to have so much internal coherence that all of their parts are aligned within, and aligned allows them to align with the creative process itself, so that we begin to manifest profoundly the bliss of heaven and the power of heaven and the power of our divine nature inside time and space in the community of other awakened diamond souls.
Mm-hmm. A couple things are running through my mind as I'm listening to you, Chris. One of the things was this idea of the telescope and looking out there at this vast, vast space and universe, thinking about the bigness of that. And in doing that, you do write in the book that there's, you got to a certain point thinking almost like, I'm going to get there. And then all of a sudden, here you are in this gorgeous place of the diamond soul. You'll talk about diamond luminosity here in a minute, but you got there and then you realized, oh, there is so much more yet. Like, for our finite mind to just stop thinking there's the there, you know, and that we're going to get there, but to just really open to the infinite amount of vastness that you experienced, I think is an incredible piece. But you're doing this elegant job. So I'm going to pull in the second part. You're doing this beautiful weaving of encouraging us that all of these lifetimes, right, all of these reincarnations come into a fullness of one. It's like not like this disbursement into that infinite reality, but that this meaningful journey comes into this very large, expansive place, but it isn't a return to what was. It's really this encompassing of all that we've been throughout many, many lifetimes, thousands and thousands of years. So I wonder if you could just speak more about that journey, like that one place in the book where you went, oh, wait, there's so much more. It was like, it was almost like you got to rest in the final stages mm-hmm. of your journey here to go, wow, I thought I was going to get there. And now I realize, wow, like, who knows what? And I think that that imagining is something really fun to do for all of us, but it is a shift in that hero's journey. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a shift yeah. in our consciousness of how we've seen the spiritual journey up till now of we're going to go and we're going to get there. So speak yeah. more about that.
Well, as you say, I thought that the purpose of this journey was to get somewhere, to get to the end, to become one with God, to dissolve into the metacosmic void, or to, you know, somehow get to the, to come home, to come completely home. And I had many experiences of homecoming and experiences of return to essence and communing with the foundation of my essence. And they were all deeply moving. But I found that an even deeper homecoming would emerge with time, an even deeper state of ecstatic participation. And then eventually, when the diamond luminosity emerged in my work in the last 5 years, when I had the experience of the diamond luminosity, I thought, this is it. I mean, I cannot imagine anything more wonderful than this. This is more than I've ever imagined possible. I understand now why to talk about ecstasy and bliss is far too small. It's not about ecstasy and bliss. It's about a different order of being, a hyper clarity, an infinite clarity of being within which all existence arises and falls. 50 sessions in, right? 2/3 of my way through this entire journey. 50 sessions in, I'm in the second immersion in the diamond luminosity, in the peak immersion, just floating in the bliss of it. And then I had this experience where my visual field pivoted 90 degrees. Far in the distance, I saw a reality that was beyond even the diamond luminosity. I could see a reality out there. I could see a domain of light, and a ray of light came out of that reality and hit me. And it was so powerful that even though I was soaking in the diamond luminosity, it completely shattered me. And it totally transformed my understanding. That's when I understood it's an infinite progression. It's a complete mistaken logic to think that the purpose is to try to get somewhere. And again, if we sort of step back into cosmology, the universe has been unfolding for 13.7 billion years, more or less. How many more billion years lie ahead? Another 13.7, another 50 billion years lying ahead, an evolving universe. Everything that we know, even the highest state of spiritual realization of the highest masters now, if we move 100,000 years into the future, humanity will be capable of even higher levels of realization. How far can we keep this up? Where is it going? The landscape of spiritual development, of evolutionary development, is so vast, we can't see the end of it. It's just beyond it. The Buddha said, you know, when he was asked what happens to an awakened being when they die, he said, I'm not going to say anything about that because it wouldn't do you any good. You have to get there first. It's just the world is so different. I think we're on a much, much larger playing field than we had imagined before. We are a much older player on this playing field than we had imagined before. We're part of a much, much bigger team. We are so connected to so many people on this planet Earth that we have been connected through so many incarnations. Just to come to terms, just to glimpse the enormity of the Creator's intent is both a humbling and an ennobling event, an ennobling experience. And it reframes our entire sense of participating in the universe. This universe is the manifest body of the divine. There is not a single atom in the entire universe which isn't a particle of the divine in this massive unfolding process. To know that, to feel that, to intuit that, brings one home into the divine, into the manifest divine, into the physical divine, in a way which you realize this is heaven. Heaven is a state of awareness which, when embodied completely, turns your physical existence into a heavenly existence. Nirvana is samsara. Samsara is nirvana. You don't really go elsewhere in the realization of these deep spiritual states. You awaken to the reality that we are.
That's such a beautiful vision. And as you said, it's an expansive vision of what many people historically have thought. And so my question is, Chris, how can people take that all in and kind of live a life with it, in the sense of knowing, in many ways, we're really just at our baby steps, knowing that reincarnation is actually a vitally important a factor and also a gift to us in the learning. And that also human identity is really important. As you would describe, you were the totality of this, and somewhere within that, you, as Chris Bash, still existed. There's importance in our identity. And if you could speak to that a bit, and also if I can add another piece of it, how much of our individual lives with what we choose to do and not do is having an effect, maybe, and let's say an accelerated effect on this process of evolution, spiritual evolution, or is it all really more automatic? The things we can do as an individual person that really makes a difference, or is it more, just let go, trust in all that's happening, and this process, well, it's obviously inevitable. There's a few things there, please.
In Vedanta, in Hindu Vedanta, the vision is you achieve realization, you achieve awareness of the infinite, and when you die, it's a drop redissolving into the ocean. Mm. So we return and are absorbed into the unitive ocean. And if you don't understand, if you think there is a continuing individuality, then you really haven't grasped this goal of dissolving back into the one. And I understand that, but I think that's a mistake. I think that's an incomplete understanding now. I think individuality is one of the great, great gifts that time and space gives us. Creation gives us the gift of our individuality. Our nature, in essence, is of the divine nature, which in its essence is inclusive of everything which is. And yet, somewhere in this magnificent developmental process, we are graced with individuality, and an individuality which has countless unbounded amounts of time to develop within, to develop depth, capacities, to bring out the full power of our divine nature in increasingly clear form, in potent form, in compassionate, intelligent form.
Yeah, I think just what you were describing, and let's say to bring it around to our listeners, and they're getting this much broader perspective, both in our concept of time and the relevance and importance of our human identity. What a gift, and to cherish it, and just how to move forward day to day, year to year, with these evolving expansive concepts.
Yeah. How do you move forward? Again, lots of levels to that, aren't there? First of all, it so much depends on where we're starting. First of all, to know that reincarnation is true, that there's abundant factual information to support this. This isn't a whimsy. It isn't a maybe, it's a possibility. We have lots of empirical evidence today that we didn't have 50 years ago. Just to know that is the case, what an expansion of our daily life that opens up, because it gives us permission to honor our intuitions that our life is about something larger, and that there is a deep built-in intentionality to our life. There is a golden process that we are responsive to, interact with. Taking in some of these super broad ideas, the birth of the diamond soul, future human, and whatnot, to experience the intelligence of the universe, to approach it mathematically, if you're a mathematician and experiences that tremendous genius of mathematical genius, to approach the universe as a physicist and to appreciate the magnificence of the physical reality that the universe is, as an experiential approach, as a mystical approach, to dissolve into the heart and mind of the universe, these touch one's heart. And even to learn about these things, I mean, just to study people who have near-death experiences changes our life. It gives us hope. It gives us hope, and it gives us confidence in things that are beyond our vision. It gives us reasons for believing that the universe is listening to us and paying attention to how we engage the particular challenges of our life. The worst thing about the philosophy of life that's emerged in our early secular scientific culture is that we're taught life is meaningless. It has no purpose. It's generated by random mutation, screened by necessity. There's no purpose to it. There's no logic to it. And by the way, when you're dead, when your brain goes, you're gone. If you're born in lots of fortunate circumstances, good for you. If you're born in torturous circumstances, that's too bad. There's no logic to this whole process. What a terrible philosophy of life. But to begin to have experiential access to the deeper intent of the universe shatters those illusions. We begin to be able to have faith and trust. And from there, it's a matter, I think, of really looking, as the Zen saying is, look under your feet. Before we were born, we chose the incarnation that we are in. All the resources that we need to bring our life to a spiritual fruition that is within our means right now, underneath our feet. All we have to do is look around and engage, do the very best we can, live as deeply as we can, and trust that life is going, that this will take our life in a positive direction. And when we solve problems, it helps other people solve problems. Everything that we do, where we address our shadow and light, as Jung said, a candle in the darkness, it makes it easier for other people to address their shadow and light a candle in the darkness.
So to Paul's query about the individual and the collective, like, is this something that we get to relax into our awakening and it's all going to happen, or do we need to work at this? Last time you said our job is to become the fully realized being as our highest potential, the greatest good we can become, and this transforms the whole. And you also talked about our personal awakening as a part of the larger collective awakening. And so I'm just going to reframe it in another way, because I think this is important for a lot of our listeners who are out there, many with the urgency and emergency to do something, to wake humanity, to get us to, you know, we're going to perish, we're going to go extinct, we're going to burn up the planet. And there's that need to act. Like, what do we do to act? And there's the beautiful prescription that you had that for us to focus to become fully realized is a part of that process. So can you just speak to the urgency versus the emergence? And in this birthing, I know you talk about the birth process too, which is, I think, another important piece that's really good medicine when we talk about the intense accelerated time like birth right now versus the slow process of destruction and reconstruction and the need for intervention. So can you speak about birthing the diamond soul in this capacity of what is this? What is the designing intelligence of the universe doing through us versus what is our responsibility in this moment to be fully alive in this process, fully conscious and doing our part for the good of the whole?
Good questions, meaty questions. I've been addressing this process of spiritual awakening, the awakening of the diamond soul, birth of the diamond soul, just addressing that dynamic. But what you're doing is putting on the table another aspect, aren't you? I mean, and that is, if we don't change the course of our culture, we're going to lose the planet. We're going to go extinct. We must do something. We must act. And I'm certainly wouldn't want to endorse any kind of spirituality which bypassed political activism and social responsible action. This is something to be done on all fronts. You know, there is discussion of spiritual activism, which is basically the idea that focused group spiritual awakening has an impact beyond that particular group into a large group at whole. But also, I think political activism, taking steps to make sure that we really begin to move and to take our industry and our social structure and our economics in a direction which is life enhancing, which saves lives on the planet instead of costing lives, which takes us in a direction away from climate destabilization. Those actions, I think, have a profound impact on our spiritual experience. So it's not, I don't really see an either or here. Political action, social action is a profoundly spiritual event. I mean, Gandhi showed us that, didn't he? Martin Luther King showed us that, the spirituality of action. I don't think we can be sane today if we are not taking action to try to change the course of our ecological history. How can we be sane in an insane world which is destroying the planet without taking some measure in that direction? I think we have to take action, take strong action, and at the same time, we can trust that our actions are supported by the universe. I've had this strange experience several times in my sessions, the feeling I got from this consciousness that I was with was that this divine essence is so proud of us, is so proud of humanity, and the sense that everything is right on time. Everything is proceeding right on time. And that's like a mind-blowing, because it doesn't look like things are going on time, and it doesn't look like we're doing a great job. But the sense is that the divine was proud of humanity, we're doing okay, everything is moving along right on time. Humanity is not in charge of this transformation that we're going through. Profound forces are drawing something out of us. It's drawing humanity into this transformative process. We are cooperators of this dynamic. We are not the generators of this dynamic. We are simply cooperating. The more we understand, the more we see, the more we can participate consciously, the more we can accelerate this transformative dynamic. And in the end, always, there are things going on beyond what we're able to see, beyond what we're able to understand. Even after my vision of the death and rebirth of humanity, I come to points where I just have to trust. I have to trust beyond what I was able to see in that vision, that the divine or the creative intelligence of the universe knows what it's doing and bringing us to this moment in history. My sense is it wouldn't have brought us into this crisis if it didn't believe we weren't ready for it.
Mm. Yeah, agreed. And I love the way you were just describing the deep love that the divine has for humanity. And if I may, I wrote about that a bit too at the beginning of my book, this experience with this divine consciousness that shared with me her deep, deep love of humanity, cultivating humanity eon after eon after eon after eon. And that cultivation is for a specific purpose, of which we've spoken about in part. As far as the future, and I'd like you to comment on this, Chris, if one of your visions included the Earth herself, from what I saw in this one instance, yes, of course, we're going to make it. Humanity's consciousness will be transformed into something beyond our comprehension at the moment. And simultaneously, that has a very transformative effect on the Earth herself as a planet, of what she is able to live and embrace and manifest here. So anything about the Earth herself, many of us listeners, we love nature. I started out as a biologist, just wanting to study insects, birds, you know, nature spirits, all of it. So where do you see the Earth herself through all this?
You know, I can only really address that by pointing just to one experience, which I has ramifications, but it's really just one experience. I had gone through the death rebirth process in the session. I was in the ecstatic portion of the session. I was experiencing being near or with or in an African tribe that was celebrating the ending of another year, the beginning of another year. They were doing a dance. They were doing a tribal dance. They were dancing themselves into ecstasy, and they were healing the social frictions that had existed in the previous year. And they were healing it by taking the entire community into ecstatic dance. But what was stunning to me was that this transformative ritual wasn't simply healing the human beings there, but it was actually healing the earth. I could feel and see this energy reaching out and healing this portion of the local environment, of the local territory, which to me was completely, I was not expecting, I did not imagine anything like this was possible or even necessary, that human beings could not only heal themselves, but heal the earth. And what are they healing the earth from? And the only thing I can imagine is that healing the earth from our own human misconduct towards the earth or abuse of the earth. But maybe it's more than that. Maybe the earth, in a way, is suffering from the own limits of its own spiritual awakening, which is still in process. Maybe there's a way in which our spiritual awakening nourishes a deeper ecological spiritual awakening, an earth awakening for the planet. I don't know. And I don't want to generalize off the experiences that I do have. There's much in your question that I really have to say, I just don't know. It lies outside my experience.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You did mention just now, Chris, your own death and rebirth process. And I just want to remind our listeners and maybe have you expand on this too, that it wasn't a singular experience of a death and a rebirth. It was a continual experience of death and rebirth. And so often in the New Age community, there's this myth that we have our awakening, you know, like, oh, I had a Kundalini awakening. I was awake for a year and now I'm a enlightened being. And I just saw another young person put herself out there that way yesterday. And I'm like, I want to learn more about her. And I want to talk to her about her experience and learn. But from your experience, there's levels and levels and levels, and there's purification and cleansing. And then I want to move this conversation from the idea that there's these stages of purification and awakening and dying in all directions, I think was your quote. That's so essential and so important for us, almost as a way to soothe our central nervous system too. Like to go, oh, it's not the one event that I'm waiting for, or the, you know, that I have to create this, or I have to sit on the mat longer to get there. But this is an evolving, sometimes not gentle, but sometimes gentle, like deepening and evolving into that process. And I say that with the idea that I'd love for you to go into then one of your final experiences where personal history was just removed. Like there's no history in the personal history. Yes, the collective history is an important piece, and we release and let go of personal history. I've had that experience myself where like it was just so gone that I couldn't even reference time space for a long time because there was no history there. So what is the role of that? The dying process, the redying, redoing in all directions, and then that stage of the history once you come into that diamond soul space.
You know, it's interesting. Your questions move me so much. They've moved me, and when I open in response to them, I get lifted into the area that you've opened to me, and I get moved into it so deeply, I lose my starting point into it. Mm. You know, so I try to hold on to both questions, and I get lost in the second question, and I try to come back to the first question, and I can't pull it together. Give me the first question again.
Let's just talk. The first one. Let's muse into the idea of the continual death rebirth process as a healthy process itself, that it's not an individual isolated event.
Yeah. I too love people who have had a mystical experience or an experience of unitive consciousness, and there, that's it. And that's wonderful. And it is wonderful. And no doubt they've paid a price to be at that place. But if they hold their form, and if they continue to do their spiritual practice, and if they just hold their form, they'll find that their system takes them eventually into another level of surrender, of letting go, and an even deeper set of spiritual experiences will open. And then rather than think, now I'm there, if you just hold the form and keep doing the practice, eventually, yet another level will open. The death and rebirth changes with each level because the nature of the reality that you're entering is different, and then the nature of reality you enter is different. And so the nature of the death-rebirth process that you take into that reality, or that admits you into that reality, is different and deeper. In the beginning, it's ego death. It's the death of our time-space identity. It's the death of something that we've been holding on to that anchors us in time-space reality. But then at later stages, there's a stage where your entire history falls away from you. You can't reconstruct who you are, who you've been. It just completely falls away from you. And then what are you if you are not who you have been? Just what are you at that moment in time? At a later stage, not only does your individual identity fall away, but your identity as a human being falls away, and all of human history falls away. And that means all the mythologies and all the philosophies and all the religions and all the stories and all the literature and everything that human beings have ever told to themselves about what's going on in reality, all of that falls away. What are you then? What is this consciousness that is now operating outside human history consciousness? And in many ways, my mind often goes to images of looking at Earth from deep space. You know, when we're rising above the Earth, rising above the details, and entering into a fundamentally different perspective, a different experience of the wholeness of the planet that is beyond the individual experiences of individual people, even nations, even cultures. And I think that happens psycho-spiritually. The process of entering into divinity, of returning to divinity, has so many layers that it would be just premature to pull up, just claim any one layer as where we should stop and where we go. Eventually, for me, Can I bridge into the diamond luminosity?
Please. Yes.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years of my work, trimming off the last year, which is kind of the wrapping up time, in the last 4 years, of the last 5 years, 26 sessions after all the adventures that, you know, we've touched on up to this point in time, deeply satisfied with all sorts of existential and spiritual blessings, the birth of the future human having been laid out, you know, in time, I went through a deep death and rebirth process again and awoke within this reality that I call the diamond luminosity. When I look for counterparts in the spiritual literature, the closest counterpart I find is what Buddhism calls Dharmakaya, the clear light of absolute reality. Hyper, hyper clear. The most stunning part about it was the clarity, just clarity. Beyond imagination, beyond time, beyond space, a clarity which just fills every pore of your being. And the odd thing is to experience this clarity with an overlay of homecoming, that this clarity is something that I'm remembering, something that I have lost contact with over time. It's always been there. It's always been all of our essential nature, but somehow in the dance, we lose contact with it. How can something so crystal clear, so devoid of any trappings of individual history or even species history, how can something so clear evoke such profound feelings of homecoming to it? And as I process my own experience of that, I realize that I've seen this before. Spiritual practitioners all over the world have had the same experience of immersion in this reality and have had the same wonder overtake them that's overtaken me. You know, this, the wonder of such exquisite beauty, devoid of all form and shape, and yet absolutely essential to our human identity.
And knowing that you've always been that, and when there was never a moment when you were not.
Yeah. It doesn't begin and end. We simply awaken to it, and that awakening changes nothing except a little switch in our own mind. We've always been supremely loved. And, you know, it's like, we will not be more loved by the universe when we're a diamond soul. We won't be more loved in any time in the future when we have all made this transition into the next future human than we already were 50,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago. The love is abiding and it cannot be changed, cannot be obstructed.
You know, the thing that you say, Chris, as we're having to wrap up again another conversation that has just been so beautiful. We've never been more loved. We'll never be more loved. And yet perhaps we will be more loving. You talk about the compassion that awakens. And when we're in that state, we can't harm another soul. We can't harm, like we care for all life on the planet, right? Because we get it at such a more intrinsic level. It's just a part of who we be then. So what a beautiful image that you paint for us as we move through these continued stages of our evolution of consciousness on the planet and birthing this perhaps new way of being as that in relationship to all things. So yeah. Any last words from you, Paul, first, and then Chris? And maybe you want to respond to that. Let's go Chris first. Any last words from you, Chris? And then maybe Paul will have something for you on that last little piece. Any last words from you?
I think you said it beautifully. I mean, I really do. I find that the deeper I plunge into the universe, the more I come home to my own reality, the more I'm just struck with it's I'm just waking up to something that has always been, that I've always been loved. Each of us have always been loved. It's simply now that we get the joy of cooperating with this love, never doubting again, never doubting that we are loved, we are attended to and being taken care of, even if the attention can be hard and severe. It's unbroken continuity of love and affection.
Beautiful. That is beautiful, Paul. And Chris, thank you so much. We're looking forward to one more conversation with you, at least, because we've all agreed we have to do at least three here. And next time, we're really going to work on the integration piece and trying to pull all this together. So thank you for being here today and talking about the diamond soul and what that really inspires inside each of us as we're moving through this journey together. So thank you so much for being here again.
Thank you, Julie. And thank you, Paul. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Chris.
And listeners, we thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to this Main Street Mystics series. I want to leave you with the words of Chris. He wrote, "I felt a larger plan for humanity beyond the coming darkness into the joy that follows. The entire context of human experience had shifted. In place of existential isolation, competition, and conflict, there was now a profound sense of inclusion and harmony. A psycho-spiritual equality saturated everything. The magnitude of the shift is still difficult for me to fathom. A new order had truly emerged in creation." I'm Julie Kroll. You've been listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. This is the Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together, we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, we're sending you a world of love. Bye for now. If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting the Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliekrollemail.com. Thanks for listening.